It's the Freedom Talk Show with Veronica.
Hello, hello, everyone. Welcome to the Freedom Talk Show with Veronica. My name is Veronica Blay. Today on the show, I am joined by Delegate Lashris A of the 63rd District of Virginia. Delegate, how are you doing today?
I am doing amazing. Thank you so much for having me today.
Thank you for coming. It's truly an honor. I've been looking forward to this interview. And as I told you earlier, I was a bit nervous because you have accomplished so much. And I was telling my husband, I said, I'm going to be interviewing her and I need to be on point today. So thank you for taking the time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I am excited about this conversation. I think it's timely that we can discuss the things that are happening around us. But more importantly, I've always been someone who has believed that anything I can share regarding my own personal journey and experience, I want to pour into others as much as I can.
Oh, that's beautiful. That is beautiful. So tell me, how long have you been a delegate in Virginia?
Yes, so I was sworn in 2016 to the Virginia House of Delegates, and it's been an unexpected journey, not as well planned as some might imagine when you enter the political arena, but it has been, I think, amazing to be here at this time because there has not been one dull moment, and I feel like I have incrementally been able to have an impact.
Is there something that you always wanted to do as a child, or you grew up and saw that there was a need in your community and decided to embark on this journey?
You know, Veronica, I lived through very adverse circumstances as a child. I was born to a very young mother at 16, she was when she had me. And I experienced a lot of hardship. And so growing up, I always felt like I wanted to do whatever I could to prevent others from experiencing that same hardship. And I did not know it would take the form of being in elected office. In fact, ironically enough, I was one of those kids that wanted to be a school teacher and used to make of my little cousins, you know, sit down and we would play school. And so I thought I would grow up to be a teacher. But over time, I have just observed the role of government and the impact that government has on your day-to-day life. And I did a lot of volunteering, which exposed me to sort of the mechanisms in which you can bring about change. And that's sort of how I ended up in this place.
I was going to talk about education later on during the interview, but you mentioning that you wanted to be a school teacher at a very young age. I know you are very big on education now.
Yes.
Are there any policies that you have put in place or that are being put in place during these trying times we find ourselves in towards education?
So for the most part, since I've been in office, I've evolved in my thinking around education. For the most part, I thought that making sure that our schools had the resources to sort of attract the best and most talented teachers was most important. The infrastructure being most important, really just all about the money. But I can see now that in addition to money, we actually need to ensure wraparound services are present in our schools. And so making sure that our guidance counselors are able to actually do the job of providing counseling to our students is critical. Making sure that our young teachers have mentorship within the schools so that they can get that experience to be able to deal particularly with the dynamics that you see in inner city schools. So really, I have been able to get a lot of money allocated to our schools. Right. And just beginning this past year is when I've done a bit more in trying to make sure that we have those additional wraparound services. COVID has presented a very difficult situation because a lot of those approaches are sort of at a standstill because of all of the economic distress that's being experienced as a result of COVID-19. And so in Virginia, we'll go back into special session perhaps later on in August to actually make final decisions around those things. And so I'll be pushing for those policies, but also continuing to do so because it's not a sort of a final destination. It's constantly evolving.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So you speaking on COVID and its effects on the school system. Do you think when everything reopens up, when the education system reopens up, that there will be a big gap left for the student or for, you know, for people like you in public office?
Yes.
What can we do or what can be done or what is being done to avoid this big gap from happening?
Yeah, so even prior to COVID-19, there has been huge achievement gaps, particularly in minority communities. I can say specifically in Virginia, but really anywhere you look where there are urban communities, you oftentimes see these achievement gaps. And it really is full circle going back to the amount of resources that school systems have to sort of combat this. And a lot of times it's deeply rooted in, you know, Virginia, and I would say anywhere, parents really need to pay close attention to the reopening plans that their schools are putting out to make sure those plans specifically address how are you going to make sure that in places where these achievement gaps were already in existence, that you are not putting out a reopening plan that is one size fits all, because we know that does not work and it has not worked. And so there needs to be deliberate efforts to not only ensure that should we go back into a place where we have to embrace distance education again, how is that going to continue to be done so that ultimately it's effective, not just for your high performing students, but also for their students that need that additional support, and that you don't just allow it to happen. It's highly complex and oftentimes difficult information to find, but as a community, we all need to engage in these reopening plans and make sure that it's not the bare minimum, but actually the maximum that these school systems can be doing. Mm.
Okay, so with there's a lot of distraction going on around, and the main issue is not being talked about, especially in our community, because I feel like, you know, everyone is so focused on, you know, what the government is doing and what this person is doing, that what needs to be the focus is not being discussed. So in your opinion, what provides good governance?
The number one element of good governance is transparency. In order for citizens to be able to engage, they need to understand and be able to actually have access to the decisions that their leaders are making. Not only access to, but in an easily understood way. You should not have to, number one, dig very far to find out the decisions that your leaders are making. But then also, once you get your hands on it, it's in all legalese. It's not easy to understand, and it's not, you know, clear for the average everyday person. Yes. And so in my mind, it starts with transparency. You know, the other thing is inviting inputs. You know, as leaders, we should not depend on our constituents to sort of come to us to tell us. We should make ourselves available and go out and seek this information. We cannot truly represent the needs of the people if we don't engage and we don't go to where they are to actually find out how they are feeling, how they are being impacted, and what their needs are. And so that level of openness is critical to a good governance process. And then I would say being adaptive to sort of the incidents, the needs. You know, if we look at what's happening around us right now, because people have taken to the streets, because people are passionately demanding a change, as leaders, we are adapting to that call to action. I don't think that in Virginia, we would be going into a special session had the call to action not been so strong, had the presence of people still even now in our streets demanding more been present. And so as leaders, good governance requires us to be willing to adapt to the needs that we see occurring and take action.
Mm. Do you see the Black Lives Matter movement and the civil rights movement as equal?
I think the civil rights movement laid the foundation for where we are in the Black Lives Movement is an extension of that foundation. I believe that the Black Lives Matter movement has allowed us to have open and honest conversations about reconciling racial issues here in our country, and particularly in Virginia, where we are the home of the Confederacy. You know, we have a huge responsibility and role in a lot of the racism that is present in our entire country, not just in Virginia. And we cannot admittedly reconcile our role without fully acknowledging that. And I believe the Black Lives Matter movement has made it so we can really embrace this opportunity to do right by not just the citizens of the Commonwealth, but for the role that we have in the racism and some of the difficulties around race that exist in our country.
To the people that say, oh, Black Lives Matter is just a movement for violence or for aggression, because you read this online, what do you say to such people?
Yeah, I see a lot of this language and messaging online. And for those people, it's really sad, because it does not take very much to see what has been happening in our country for decades, for centuries. It does not take but a quick Google search to see the disparities in pay, the disparities in home ownership, the disparities in access to capital. I mean, I can go down the list. And those disparities are not on accident. It was a result of very deliberate policies to keep a group of people from having access to these opportunities. And so for people who believe that the Black Lives Matter movement is about, you know, saying our lives are more important than theirs, no, it is about our lives should be equal too. And if you can't have an open mind enough to see the need for this movement, then there's a lot of educating that needs to occur to those people even still.
Exactly. Thank you for that. Thank you very much for that. So on a more easy note, what does a delegate do day to day? Like when you wake up in the morning?
So first, Veronica, I think it's important to say that in Virginia, we have a citizen legislature, which basically means in some states you have legislators that are full-time legislators. In Virginia, we are a legislature that only meets part-time. And so unless you are innately very wealthy and or, you know, perhaps entrepreneurial in your profession, most legislators work another job full-time. And so Yes, to be honest, as a legislature, I have a full-time job that I still must attend to. And in addition to that, I'm a mom of two boys, 8 and 12.
That's the best job.
That's the best job. Yes. I am a wife. And then I am a legislator. And I believe my profession and all of those personal titles, they inform my work as a legislator. The day-to-day side, when I am doing legislative work, most of the time it's constituent engagement, you know, taking phone calls to talk with my constituents directly. Mm-hmm. And we do a lot of case management in my office, sort of, for lack of a better word, a liaison to state resources, state agencies. If you are, you know, in need of troubleshooting, you're having a hard time. This has been especially critical during COVID-19 with the number of people trying to get access to unemployment benefits. There has been such a backlog, but when those individuals reach out to our office, we are sort of able to provide a more streamlined experience to get them answers. And so you can think of us as sort of legislative social workers, if you will, just trying to make sure that as citizens and the resources you are entitled to, you actually have access to those things. The other part is spending a lot of time just continuing to learn about the issues, whether that be from, you know, nonprofit organizations, community-based organizations, or actual academia leaders. There's all types of organizations out there that want to get their issue in front of you. And so I spent a lot of time hearing about legislative priorities and trying to really assess how those things impact my community, my immediate district, and or the Commonwealth as a whole. So In COVID-19 times, it's been a little easier to do that because everything is digital.
Yes.
But when we are not in COVID-19, that usually looks like a lot of meetings, a lot of events, a lot of speaking engagements. So if I'm honest, I've enjoyed this digital format just a little bit.
It makes life easier. As complex as it is, it makes life easier sometimes.
Yes, yes.
So to a young person who wants to run for office, what advice would you give them?
Start early. I would tell them, in my experience, it takes a little time to get the confidence around whether or not you have the skills and abilities to do this job as an elected official or any job for that matter. That confidence comes with affirmation, it comes with time, and it comes with experience. But what I can say in retrospect is a lot of the time when I was unsure about my thinking and my experience and my qualifications, I can say with confidence now that it was there the whole time. I spent a lot of time reading, learning, and observing other leaders that I wanted to be like. And when you make that investment in yourself, you know what you believe in, you're clear on the needs of the community around you, there should not be anything to hold you back. You should push as hard as you can, and you should challenge those that are already in positions of leadership. First, indirectly, you know, meeting with them, trying to understand what are they doing before you decide to run, particularly if it's against them. But if they are more of the status quo and they are not really fulfilling the needs of your community, then I would say you do the work and you bring about the change, and there isn't any reason you should not pursue elected office. But Veronica, having said that, I think the other lesson that I've learned and I feel like I want to share is that sometimes there's more power not being in elected office. What I am seeing is a lack of diverse leadership, a lack of diversity of thought, and particularly minority representation in our state agencies. So the Department of Housing, the Department of Education, the Department of Health, all of these places that are actually responsible for delivering services. And so what happens is, as a legislator, I pass a law or a policy or regulation that those agencies are responsible for carrying out. And when you don't have the presence of a strong minority representation or diversity of thought, the way some of those policies are executed can be negatively actually done. Mm-hmm. And so I find myself saying more and more, before you decide to pursue elected office, think about some of these agencies or some of these other structures where we are needed, where we don't have a presence, and there are conversations happening at a table that we are not at, but we are needed at. And so we have a lot of work to do in all of these areas, not just in elected office.
Wow, that's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. Thank you so much. Is there anything your district is currently doing that we should know about?
So right now, I would say my district is not too different from the other areas, where everyone is just trying to figure out what's the next step from these protests and these community engagements. And a lot of the work is going to be sort of digitally and or in small meeting sessions. I do not personally have anything scheduled at this time, but I am thinking through some webinars and or public Zoom meetings. I'll be happy to share that with you when the time comes.
Yeah, that would be beautiful. So if you can share your Instagram link and anywhere we can follow you, and I'll also put it in my bio so that my viewers can also know where to find you and follow up
Thank
to your
you.
Career. Is there
Thank
anything
you.
Else you want to share with us today before I let you go?
Sure. I would just say, if you are out there, if you are someone who was interested in pursuing elected office and you're not sure where to begin, and or you have questions about the role that you can play in the movement that's happening around us, and or other issues that you are sort of concerned about, I have an open door policy. Again, as I started with, I feel like it's my responsibility to pour into you what I've learned. And then oftentimes I find myself being a great resource in terms of We are all three people or persons removed. And so if there's someone you need to get to, you don't quite have access to, but that engagement would be of value to you, I'm happy to do it.
You know, Delegate, I'm going to have you on speed dial from now on.
we are all in this together.
Do you see yourself running for the seat of the presidency one day? I mean, Kanye West just announced.
Well, you know what? If Kanye West can run, then I should run too. But quite frankly, I'm not old enough yet. One day when I will be, maybe I'll think about it. I will say that my long-term goal is to, you know, hopefully one day be an ambassador. That's an entirely different conversation. But I think there's a lot of work to be done globally that has equal impact on us here in the United States. And so that's like, when I grow up, I want to be, that's my dream right there. And so we'll see what happens along the way to get there.
Well, I strongly believe that you can also be president. And I will be voting for you when the time comes.
Very kind.
Speaking of being an ambassador, I wanted to let you go. But how, I want to ask you this question. It's funny you mentioned that, but I felt in my heart to ask you, how can we bridge the gap between the African community and the African-American community? Because I look around, maybe now things are changing, but we are actually not together as we should be. It feels like there is a blockage that happened once our ancestors were brought here. It's like, okay, we forgot back home, and we in turn forgot that our ancestors were brought here. How can we bridge that gap before I let you go?
No, sure. I think number one, I think that blockage that you speak of was very intentional. I think that there is power, or someone who intends ill, there is power in that division. That's number one. And I think history shows us that that division was very much intentional. Number two, I think that in order to build that connection, it's going to take deliberate effort and interest on both sides. Some of the issues that both communities, domestic and abroad, are experiencing are innately linked, but then there are a number of issues that are not. And from my experience in other countries, there is very limited perspective on the unique experiences we each hold, just being in our various countries. And until we are exposed to those experiences, until we begin to have open conversations to learn, it will be very difficult to recognize how similar our challenges are, and then to come up with solutions to address those challenges. And so I believe strongly that you need sort of a unifier. You need organizations to actually prioritize wanting to build this connectedness. And then you need people to actually care enough to actually make that goal a reality and coming to the table to have the conversation. But I can just tell you that there is very limited understanding for the experience abroad from everyday, I don't want to just say Black people, but minority citizens. And so far we are so consumed with our own experience that we don't oftentimes give second thought to that experience that's happening abroad. And until more people are exposed and really fully understand the dynamics that exist, it's hard for the average person to say, you know what, I want to learn more about, or I want to feel that connectedness. But having said that, I do think that there are also people who are aware and who want to, but they need some support in being able to do so.
And hopefully some organizations rise up in creating a sort of an event or something that can bridge the gap between, you know, the African American community and the African community themselves and other countries around the world. On that note,
just one more point, what I will say is, I don't know if you've noticed, but one thing that I've noticed is an increase in travel to our African countries. Yes. So from a tourism standpoint, that is occurring. So how do we also make that experience an opportunity to fully embrace beyond just recreational visits, right? And so if we can capitalize on that, then I think that there is an avenue to sort of approach this desire.
Yeah, I know that last year, Ghana had a group of people organized an event called a Year of Return.
Yes.
I'm not sure if you heard of that. And we had a lot of African Americans travel to Ghana, which was such a blessing to me just watching it from here. And I cried. And I said, this is what was needed for so long. And then COVID happened, and the world needs to, the world needs to be together. And we can only heal when we are together as one. The pain that was caused, there is nothing that can be done about it because the pain happened. But to move forward is to be together in love and oneness.
Yes. And that is
so much, Delegate.
Absolutely. Thank you again for having me.
You're very welcome. Is there anything else you want to say before I let you go? We have a few more minutes, so go ahead.
I think this is good for our first conversation, and I will just say if there's ever an issue in the future that you want to discuss, just have me back.
Oh, I will have you back. Don't make me cry now. This has been so good to me. Thank you so much for taking the time. And
my pleasure.
Like I said earlier, listeners and viewers, I'm going to leave the Delegate information in the link below. Please check her out on Instagram and check her out on Facebook and follow her career and see what she's doing. And please, if you have any questions, do not fail to reach out and to ask her. Thank you all so much for joining me today. And I look forward to having you all back again. Thank you.
Thank you.